The following presentation was recorded at a Faith Builders colloquy. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Think oft times as night draws nigh of an old house on a hill, the yard all wide and blossom starred, where the children played at will. When at last the night came down, hushing the merry din, mother would look around and ask, "Are all the children in?" It's many and many a year since then, and the old house on the hill no longer echoes to childish feet. And the yard is still so still, but I see it all as the shadows creep, and though many the years have been since I heard mother ask, "Are all the children in?" I wonder if when the shadows fall on that last short earthly day, when we bid goodbye to the world outside, all tired with our childish play, when we step outside into the other land where mother so long has been, will we hear her ask, as she did of old, "Are all the children in?" It's really why we're here, isn't it? And yet time flies, goes by so fast that we wonder where it's gone. It's easy for me to come here today and talk to you. And on the other hand, it's difficult for me to come today and talk to you. One way I feel like I'm coming home, and in another way I feel like a stranger. Many, many ways, I feel like a little boy, home again. And yet last April, our great-granddaughter was born. So if all that confuses you, we'll think what it does to me. I would encourage you to listen, not because I'm speaking, but because I might repeat something that somebody else said that would be worthwhile for you to hear. And I think about the last two speakers, and we've come a long ways to come here, but I thought as I heard Melvin talk about the 12th chapter of Genesis, God's message to Abraham, and how current that is to us today, that whole thought, I had not put that together, and I thought that was worthwhile for me to come just to hear that. And so if I don't remember anything else that was said today, I feel like it was worthwhile for me to be here to hear what he had to say about Abraham's calling and yours and mine. And John made a comment that I hope you wouldn't forget. It'd be very dear to my heart. It was said better than I had ever put it together. And I won't say it exactly the way he did. But if you have a curriculum that is theologically sound and it's lacking in some secular point, isn't it better to substitute that secular point than to have a curriculum that's academically sound and you got to substitute a theological point? That might be central to what we talk about today. "Behold, all souls are mine. As the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine, saith the Lord." Ezekiel 18:4. "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward," the Lord's reward. "Children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children are their fathers. Suffer little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. I am crucified with Christ, yet I live. And it's Christ that liveth in me, and I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." When I think about that, I think about the joy that Melvin talked about. Again, a key point in what he said. You might forget everything else that he said. But as Christian teachers, if we don't find joy in it, if we don't find fulfillment in it, if we don't feel like we're doing God's will, if we don't feel like that we've been moved by the Spirit to do this, if we don't feel a certain measure of success, we might be wasting our time. Now I want to contrast that picture of children with something else. How many of you have ever read the Humanist Manifesto? Not very many. I just want to read just a little bit out of it. Here's the other side, and here's what we're bucking. And that might be Howard Hendricks in one of the books that we will refer to next week. Somebody like that we read or heard speak recently said 150 years ago, the world did not have a design on your child. The world, as whatever all that means, was basically neutral with reference to having a design on the soul of your child. That is not true today. There is a program by the devil to take over your children's soul. A program by the devil. And I'm not one that's given to overexcitable statements or being exaggerate what I say. But I am convinced that that is true. There is a design by the devil to take your child spiritually. Listen to this. Humanism is a philosophical, religious, and moral point of view as old as human civilization itself. It has its roots in classical China, Greece, and Rome. It is expressed in Renaissance and the Enlightenment, in the Scientific Revolution in the 20th century. I'm just reading this. What more pressing need than to recognize in this critical age of modern science and technology that if no deity will save us, we must save ourselves. I think that ought to alarm us. What's all that have to do with schools? We'll get to that in a minute. The time has come for widespread recognition of the radical changes in religious beliefs throughout the modern world. The time has passed for mere revision of traditional attitudes. Science and economic change have disrupted the old beliefs. Religions of the world over are under the necessity of coming to terms with the new conditions created by a vastly increased knowledge and experience. In every field of human activity, the vital movement is now in the direction of a candid and explicit humanism. In order that religious humanism may be better understood, we, the undersigned, desire to make certain affirmations which we believe the facts of our contemporary life demonstrate. There is a great danger of a final, and we believe fatal, identification of the word religion with doctrines and methods which have lost their significance and which are powerless to solve the problem of human living in the 20th century. Briefly, we want to look at what they affirmed. And remember that one of the people that signed this thing is John Dewey, who is the father of public schools, our modern school system. He's considered, everybody I think would agree, I don't think that's my opinion, he's the father of the public school system as we know it today, and this is what he believed. 28%, I believe, of the people that signed the Humanist Manifesto number 2, 1 and 2 are teachers. There is a design on the soul of your child. Religious humanists regard the universe as self-existent and not created. Humanism believes that man is part of nature and he has emerged as a result of a continuous process. What happens to your child? Some people say, well, I think that's a good school where my children go. I've talked to the teacher and she's a Christian lady and they have prayer before they eat and all that. Does it matter that your child would I exaggerate to say then in 8 or 12 years of public school, 1,000 times as a minimum, they would read the words of evolution with reference to evolution being a scientific fact? Does that have any effect on them? Does it matter? Holding an organic view of life, humanists find that the traditional dualism of mind and body must be rejected. Humanists assert that the nature of the universe depicted by modern science makes unacceptable any supernatural or cosmic guarantees of human values. Religion consists of those actions, purposes, and experiences which are humanly significant. Nothing human is alien to religion. Religious humanism considers the complete realization of human personality to be the end of man's life. There's 15 of those. We're not going to read them all. We're going to read this one last statement. So stand the thesis of human religious humanism. Though we consider the religious forms and ideas of our fathers no longer adequate, the quest for the good life is still the central task of mankind. Pick up a textbook and read it and see if you don't believe that's what it is. The quest for the good life is the central task of mankind. Man is at last becoming aware that he alone is responsible for the realization of the world of his dreams, that he has within himself the power for its achievement. He must set intelligence and will to the task. I had a student this year make a comment, and it was brought to mind when, I don't remember which one of the speakers, doesn't matter. In fact, while I think of that, there is in the poem, The House by the Side of the Road, I think it's in that poem, it has the phrase that they may forget the singer, but remember the song. And I think that's where we are as Christian teachers. You know, maybe it's good, I don't remember whether John or Melvin made reference to the fact that your students need to see Christ in you. Now that's kind of heady to think anybody would see Christ in me. But the matter of the fact is, that's what needs to take place. This student wrote me a card at the end of this year. I'd been her teacher for 7 or 8 years. She said, I was driving down the road the other day, and I realized that the thoughts I was thinking were what you would think. I made a comment to a classmate, and I realized the answer that I gave them is what you would say. A teacher has more impact on their students' lives than we probably ever want to admit. So appreciate you all being here today, and my interpretation of what I was supposed to do might be slightly different than Milo's. And I think one time, someplace, I heard him say, do whatever you want. Something like that. Did you, Milo? Okay. So what we would like to do, I gave you some handouts, this pre-lecture quiz. You don't have to fill that out and hand it in, so that ought to make you feel better. By the way, as we get into this, I hope that you respond more and ask more questions, and don't wait till the end. If you want to ask a question or interrupt me. I like that, and so please do. You know, as teachers, all of you like for your students to respond. You like to see some enthusiasm, don't you? And then I notice when we all come together as teachers, we all sit there half asleep. That might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but not much. I've noticed for many years, if I say, I think we ought to get together and we ought to have a class on some certain things, you know, whether it's math or grammar or whatever it is, and have somebody come talk to us, and boy, I can just see that wall rising. And yet we tell our students, oh, you need to learn. Don't be afraid of learning, you know, just get in and do it and have a good attitude about it and dig into it. You do that with a bunch of teachers and see what happens. They act like a bunch of students. So that's just this pre-lecture quiz. You don't have to turn it in, so that'll make you breathe easier. And I'm not going to grade it or anything. But with reference to these kind of schools, and we left correspondence school off, that could very easily be added onto there. It would focus basically on the student. But could you do that? And that's kind of maybe somewhat what we want to look at today. Then I did this Gallup poll on schools. I don't know if you want to answer those or not. I think on 10, that really shouldn't be a question mark at the end of it. Just pick secular, biblical. That's kind of what we're talking about, is sending your children to public school, compromising with the world. Some people think so. I might think so. But I just wonder what your answer would be to all those questions. Sometimes we believe something, but when it comes down to putting it into words, we don't really want to put it in words because we're afraid somebody will read it. And so we really don't believe it that firmly. Or maybe what we say we believe is what we would like to believe, but we don't quite believe it. I don't know if that's all making any sense to you. But I think that we ought to decide what we believe about this whole thing of schools. Are vocational schools geared to regurgitating second-class workers? In our society today, as religious people, as a Christian people, have we taken a worldly view of working with our hands? Do you ever think about that? If you had a son-in-law and somebody asked what he did, would you be just as proud to say that he's an auto mechanic as if he was a doctor? Would it make any difference? Well, I don't socialize in your circles, so I can't answer for yours, but I could answer for mine. Is it true that homeschoolers tend to be holier than thou and they do not mix well with others? Just 10. Obviously, nothing is 100%. Does attendance at secular college taint you spiritually for life? Well, I went there, and my answer to that would be it could. We're fools if we think it couldn't. Is Bible school a cop-out for reality? Does it generate holiness rather without utility? Does it support the adage, you can become so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good? All these are not made up by me. They're comments that I've heard. Are our church schools only geared for the good? Do they not have a place for the down and out child? And hopefully we will answer that in our solution at the end. Johnny's an orphan with some bad habits, words, attitudes, actions, who has a desire for better things. Where do you think he should go to school? Isn't that a fair question? Parents in your school don't want him in your school because he's going to taint him. Well, where should he go to school? I sat Wednesday night with a father and a mother and three children that I'd never seen before. The oldest girl is going to be a freshman. She wants to go to our school. And this mother, literally with tears in her eyes, was begging for help for this daughter. This daughter, they are Basque people, dark-complected, a beautiful family, physically. This 13-year-old daughter is a beautiful girl by anybody's standards. But her mother is very concerned about her spiritually. In fact, the father made the comment, if we have to send her to public school, I really don't know what will happen to her. Well, I think I know what will happen to her. If Jesus were here, beyond a doubt, he would tell the parents of James and Mary, who are good children, to send them to a what kind of school? What would Jesus say? Isn't that a fair question? Isn't that what we ought to be saying? What Jesus would say? And so if you're going to say what you ought to be saying, you better figure out what Jesus would say. What would he say? One primary goal of Christian schools in America is to return America to the Lord. Is that our goal? I heard a speaker just in the last week. Excellent speaker. Probably twice as many people as there are here. Was in that crowd. And he was speaking at a homeschool convention, and he said that is the purpose of homeschooling, of Christian homeschooling in America, is to turn it around and return it to the Lord. He said it with conviction. I believe he believed it. Is that what it's all about? What do you think, John?
Not
mine. And yet I learned a lot from what he said. The idea that Henry's in the sixth grade and Amanda's in the first grade is a secular, or is it a biblical one? I heard that just in the last week. A man that was involved in a homeschool association, in California Homeschoolers Association, was telling this mother that it doesn't matter. The only reason you need to know is because those people out there want to know. So if they ask what grade Henry's in, just tell them he's in the sixth. It doesn't matter what grade he's in. And I'm standing there thinking, maybe it doesn't matter how old he is. Does God care how old he is? Any mother who has the desire to teach can learn chemistry in the same time her teens do. True or false? And then, brief analysis of homeschool options. You have that sheet? Mission statements. Did you have that sheet? That's it. Huh? Oh, yeah, that's the first one that I write. Outline of the school survey. Okay. Let's look at this one, a brief analysis of the school options. That's really, and we want to think about, if you're a Christian school teacher, and I assume that you are, or you're involved in a Christian school, you are on a mission. That becomes more clear to me all the time. You are on a mission. In fact, you're on a mission field. If you don't even let anybody but people out of children out of your fellowship come to your school, you're on a mission field. Now, the school that I teach in is different. We have some, I haven't counted them, but I'm sure there's 10 or 12 different churches represented. Many of them are Pentecostal churches. We let children from other fellowships into our school. There is some risk involved in that, but I believe that there is some blessing also. We let homeschoolers, they come part-time into our school. If they want to come for a physics lecture, like some of them will this coming year, they may only come from 11 to 12 for 3 days and set in on the physics lecture. If they want to come for a geometry lecture also, they can do that. So we have children come just part-time to our school. Many of them will come just one day on Thursday when we have choir and a longer PE. And so they're homeschoolers, and their parents would like for them to get involved socially with some other children. And so they will come only on Thursday. And so we work with a lot of different kind of schools. That's kind of my background and where I am. But let's look at this whole thing of the schools and just think about the pros and the cons. And before I do that, I want to put one thing up here on the board that a man told me, and maybe you've seen this saying. I had never seen it. There's a mission in the city of Modesto that feeds the homeless, and this is their motto. Did you ever wonder what you could do if you were Bill Gates and you had $16 billion in your checking account or savings account? Why doesn't God do something about Bill Gates and have him do something with all that money? And I think that is a very, very true statement. Do you ever wonder why a brother in your church that has the money He may send his children to your school, and you have another family in your church or in your school that is really struggling. Maybe they don't even send all their children, and they would like to, and they're homeschooling some of them, or maybe they're not doing anything with some of them. Why doesn't that brother step forward and offer to pay? Isn't that bearing one another's burdens? Or doesn't that scripture mean that? What does it mean? How often have you ever seen that happen? Well, I have a few times, but not much. So these people that are equipped, whether it's funds, I know of a brother who is excellent at grading. He's excellent at grammar. He's a grammar expert. If he graded essays, he would make comments on them, and he would do a superb job. But he isn't involved in the school. You see, he's equipped. But God hadn't called him, evidently, to work in the school. You ever wonder about that? So anyway, think about that saying. Homeschools, they focus on the family. How many of you here have family, meaning you have brothers and sisters that are either in homeschools or their children homeschool? How many of you? So you would be fairly intimately involved in homeschools. My oldest daughter has homeschooled her children for how long? 15 years. I don't know how long. Anyway, for 15 years, there's families in our fellowship that homeschool their children. We would know a lot of people that homeschool. My brother homeschools his children. He lives in Ohio. Homeschools. That thing has grown so big in California that I think if they passed a law and tried to stop it, there's no way they could. I think the cat is out of the bag, and there's no way they could put it back in. Really. Right in the city of Modesto, I would hate to say it's a city of about 150,000, 170,000 people, and it would be my guess that there are, and I don't know how many children go to school in the city of Modesto, but it'd be my guess that there are 5,000 homeschoolers, maybe more, 5 to 10,000 homeschoolers in the city of Modesto. I don't think the state can get all that back in. It's a big, growing thing in America today. And I do not want to portray it in a negative way. There are a lot of very, very good things going on in homeschools. And these people, my daughter, whoever it is, they have a fervor for that. They have a calling for it. I do not hesitate to say that they are more dedicated to what they're doing than what I see the parents in our church day schools. And so the question is, and there would be some of them that would think that that is the only way, they would think from a biblical standpoint that that is the only way that a Christian family ought to school their children. I'm not saying they all think that, but that is a prevalent thought. Is that true? And they would quote scriptures like the ones that I mentioned here, and there is a whole host of them. If you go to a homeschool convention, it is amazing what is there. Amazing. There was probably from 1,000 to 2,000 people at this homeschool convention recently in Modesto. And there was booths of all kinds offering all kinds of material beyond description. And I heard one of them say, with reference to this Deuteronomy 6:7, that that's the way a child is to be taught, by the parent, day by day as you walk in the way. And I am not making fun of that scripture or anything, but the thing of it is that really the primary meaning of that scripture? And does that make it incumbent on everyone to do that? Homeschools. So what is the strength of homeschools? Well, you'll hear such things as, we want to pass on our family values. That would be a big thing. We want to pass our family values on to our children. And my question is, that's sort of implying and I don't think that's true. And yet it is true, and I have seen this many, many times, just thinking about the pros and the cons, that when a father and a mother are dedicated to homeschooling their children, like many of them are, they develop a relationship with those children that is enviable. And the parents that send their children to our school, if I would ask them, are you really satisfied with your relationship with your children? Most of them would admit that there is a problem with it. Now, it doesn't mean that you should send your children to homeschool, but it may mean that we need to work harder at developing a relationship with our children. Because when it's all is said and done, that's really what you're going to pass on to your children, is your relationship with them. I've never had much money. I've never been a businessman. It's not the kind of thing that has interested me. And I apologized to my oldest boy one time. I said, you know, John, I really haven't been able to help you financially like I wish I could. And, you know, I wish that things had been different. And, I mean, he was totally disgusted with me or even bringing it up. He said, you gave me something a lot more valuable than that. He said, that doesn't even matter. And that did my heart good. But I think that's true. The most valuable thing that you can pass on to your children is faith in Jesus Christ and a desire to do what he wants them to do. You can give your child $1 million, and if he doesn't have integrity, if he doesn't have some ambition, if he doesn't have some responsibility, he'll lose it. But if you pass on to a child integrity, if you pass on to them a love for God, if you pass on to them a faith in Jesus Christ, you will never lose it. That's eternal. And that's independent of where you live, how much money you have, and all of those things. That is an opportunity that we all have, and homeschoolers are grasping on to that opportunity to develop a relationship with their children. And I think that in the church setting, as church leaders, we need to recognize the value of doing that. The homeschoolers that I am involved in our congregation and whatnot, I try to encourage them. We had one that was on our board at school. He had never sent his children to school. People liked him, and he was voted on to the school board. And he always felt funny about that. I don't know how many times he apologized to me. He said, I'm on the school board. He said, I don't even send my children here. I said, don't worry about it, Al. People respect you, and that's fine. You just homeschool your children. But I know that the day will come when they're teenagers, when they're probably going to want to do something else. So homeschools, a beautiful opportunity for a parent that wants to dedicate their time, that time and effort. What is the pitfalls of it? The pitfalls of homeschools, and I'm probably going to spend more time on this than any other, because I don't know if it's an issue in your community. In our community, it's a big issue. Homeschoolers tend to feel like outsiders in the rest of the congregation. I have them tell me that. Well, we homeschool our children, and I really don't feel like I fit in socially, I'm talking about. A very common comment. And if the children hear that comment, that the parents don't feel fit in, don't feel like they fit in to the whole church structure, then guess what the children are going to feel like? That is a problem with homeschools. Another problem with homeschools, and I hear this all the time, I ask my daughter Phyllis, before I come, I said, Phyllis, what's the biggest problem with homeschools? And she said, oh, they don't do the work. And she is involved in a lot of them, and she hears them make comments. What did your children do today? She'll ask a mother that homeschools, and she'll say, well, we were out late last night, and we really didn't feel like doing anything today, so I just decided that today we wouldn't do any schoolwork. That is not a rare incident. That is a very, very common thing. On and on and on. I could give you various forms of that I've personally heard. What's that tell the children? Well, it tells them that school isn't important. It tells them that learning isn't important. In fact, is learning important? And in that one song that we sang, did you notice that little phrase and had our hour? That's almost hard to say it. Our hour. Have you ever had children that couldn't hear the difference between our and our? See, that's a nonsense. It's very difficult. And then the question comes up, does it matter? Does it matter? You think, Brian, does it matter if the child knows the difference between our and our? You can say the difference. I think it matters. I'm not saying you can go to heaven. You can't go to heaven if you don't know the difference. But it matters. God intends for us to speak right and do things right. Isn't that what he wants? God does things right. When he got through making something, he said it was good. I did a good job. And I think in our spirit, he wants us to think that. And you just think about that. Now, does it matter? Well, I say with a student, it doesn't matter so much that they get that right, our, hour, is that they realize that it's important. If you can finally get it through their head how to say that, and they think it was all a waste of time, then guess what? Huh? It was a waste of time, yeah. Forget it. It was a waste of time. And so the most important thing is that they realize that that's important. Now, it's just a detail, but details can be important. Now, too many homeschoolers, then, are not doing their job. How do I know that? Because probably two-thirds of our school that come full-time are ex-homeschoolers. And you ask them what grade they're in, and, well, I mean, the answers you get really belong on a comic page. You wouldn't believe the answers that I get. What grade are they in? Well, they want them. And the mother is frustrated, typical scenario. The mother is frustrated and she doesn't want to homeschool anymore and they want to send them to school, and then I'm supposed to figure out where they belong because they really haven't done their job. And if they're going to homeschool, it takes a dedicated father and a mother, and I think they can do an excellent job. We have many homeschoolers who have done a very, very good job. But this thing of self-motivation, is a problem. What would one of these mothers that said, well, we just didn't feel like having school today, and so we just let it go for today. What would she think if she sent her daughter to my school and she picked her up one night and she asked her daughter what they did at school? And she said, well, the teacher said he just didn't feel like doing anything today, so we didn't do anything. What's the difference, really? I mean, they'd say, well, that's ridiculous. And I think that we need to encourage homeschoolers to be diligent in what they do, and there are many of them that are. Any of you have any comments? pro and con. Melvin, you homeschool. Who else here homeschools? Somebody must. Nobody hears. What do you have to say?
One question about homeschool or not doing that one church.
Yes.
And what I've observed sometimes is that the school program can be integrated a large part of the time. And what sometimes is not understood, not just the homeschool problem, but also the foundation problem.
Definitely. And hang on to that thought, and before we're done, I'd like to speak to that. I agree. We help them feel like outsiders, right? That's what you. I think that's true. And there's a cure for that, but most people don't like the cure. So homeschools, the opportunity is there. There is a plethora of curriculum. Another danger, just one last thing that I'm going to mention about homeschools, is too often the parent thinks that there is some secret out there with reference to curriculum or methods that is a cure-all. And so homeschoolers fall prey to all this curricula, manipulatives, you name it, that come along because they think, Johnny is not getting along good in math. Maybe if I use this and they use that, and I don't know how many of them say, hey, my own daughter included, I got a cupboard full of stuff. And the secret to Johnny learning math is not whether he uses Weavers or Saxon or who knows what. The secret to Johnny learning math is Johnny learning math. At some point in time, he's got to learn it, right? I mean, 3 times 4 equals 12, and he has to learn that 3 times 4 equals 12. There isn't any curriculum, there isn't anything, no matter how pretty the colors are in it, that's going to help him learn that. He has to learn it, and that's what they have to be made to do, even children in our own schools. Church schools, they focus on the church. Some schools more than others, not all of them are directly connected with the church. The one I teach in is connected with the church, not the one that I go to, but it is very much a part of the church where the school is, and it tends to focus on the church, and it tends to be in existence in order to promote that congregation. And I think maybe this morning something was said here, and just think about that. Is it your calling as a member of this church, whatever church you go to, congregation I'm talking about, is it your calling, is it your task, is it your duty in life to promote that congregation? Is that your primary duty? Or is it bigger than that? And I think that is a key question to a lot of this. A lot of the problems that arise. It focuses on the church. Part of that cannot be helped. The church schools that I've been familiar with, I've only taught in two, but I've in two of them, but I have talked to a lot of teachers, is we tend to be overly afraid of reaching out. And I know as well as anybody, we had to expel 4 students last year. I've never expelled that many students in one school year. In fact, that's as many, I suppose, I've done all the rest of my school teaching. And I know there is a limit to what you can allow. But I wonder that if our goal is not too narrow with reference to our church schools. Maybe they could be more of a mission than what we think. And I think part of that comes, you hear verses like this one I have there in Timothy, I think that's, which is the house of God, the church of God, the pillar and the ground of the truth. That is not talking about the church house. That is not talking about the church structure. That is not talking about the liturgy. That is talking about the ecclesia, God's people, as a whole, and that can get misinterpreted. What can church schools do? It is available to most of people in most congregations, not all of them. But a church school is available, there, at least in our area. There are many, many of them. And they have an opportunity of providing for children during the day when they're not in the home. Exposure to a Christ-like atmosphere. And John was mentioning what does make a Christian, I think it was John, a Christian school. Just hanging out a sign and saying this is Happy Valley Christian School and buying some Christian textbooks and hiring some, quote, Christian teachers and having children that go to church, go to school, does not make a Christian school. I am totally convinced of that. We would have probably one of the biggest Christian schools in our area. For all practical purposes, it has become a public school. They have drug busts and the whole thing. You name it. And it's there. But we have the opportunity, I want to leave it that way, in our small church schools, we have the opportunity to teach children academics in a Christ-like atmosphere. And of course, the question that always comes up is, does it matter whether your child learns algebra or not? And it depends on what you want to do. And that whole gets into a whole other area of things. But I tell the teachers where I teach, I tell them, I want you to remember that what the child needs to remember about the year is our attitude and our dealing with them, because that is what's important, our relationship with them. That's the way you change lives, is by a relationship and not by a textbook. And I'm not saying we don't need textbooks. But if the children come out of our school and they were an excellent math student, they were an excellent science student, they did great in all their grades, they were a good sport on the ball field, but they do not feel an intimacy with Jesus Christ, I say the whole thing is a failure and a waste of money and time. Now, I realize that that may happen afterwards. And I don't know whether you're familiar with the term closure or not, but in Christian schools or as Christian teachers, pastors, parents for that matter, we need to remember that we are not dealing in a discipline that involves immediate closure. What I mean by that is a carpenter or a builder will take a job to build a house, and he builds it, he gets it painted, he cleans the windows, he washes off the walks, he plants the lawn, and the thing is done, and he gets paid, and that's it. That's closure. We're not dealing with that kind of thing. What you may, at this point in time, term a failure, may in 5 or 10 years turn into a success. And that's why I have on that list of mission statements, the Lord sends me little candidates for the kingdom, and I help them open the door. That's my calling. The downside of church schools is they can become cliques. I've seen that happen even between schools. In the fellowship that I have, there are part of the children go to one Christian school, and part of them go to the school where I teach. And I just watch it every Sunday, just in a little way. I just watch them, and there's some polarization there, no question about it. And I think as parents, and we need to encourage parents to not let that happen. They can become cliquish. And part of that is just natural with children, but we need to guard against it. One of the big things that I see wrong with church schools, and that is the cost. Now, I know that is a very mundane subject to bring up, but it is very real, and it bothers me that in order to do something in a way that we would term the right way before God, that it's as expensive as it is. And I'm not sure what the answer to that is. I have some ideas, but I'm not sure what the answer to that is. But I think that is a big hindrance. It is not realistic if it costs, most schools cost somewhere between $100 and $200 a month for 10 months in the year to send a child. If a family has 4 to 8 children, that virtually becomes prohibitive. So what's the answer? Anybody have the answer? I was hoping to find the answer. Really? That bothers me very, very much about our church schools. If that's really the way to go, then there must be an answer. Nobody has it?
Jonas, you don't have it?
One alternative.
Okay.
No stipulated cost.
What?
I said not stipulated cost, but you have done an offering for the whole church month.
Yeah. We tried that, and one of the that is one answer. The trouble is people wanted to know, well, you know, what does it cost? And they kind of have a right to know. And then that makes those that can't feel like second-class students, parent clientele. That recognizes that somebody's going to really help, right? Well, the other big option is public school. You're not asking any questions. Janice, you don't have any questions? Huh? Oh, yes.
In connection with the cost, Brother, how do you reimburse at a proper level to maintain a good teaching certification within your school without treating it totally as a voluntary service?
I intended for the questions to be easier. John.
That's in the nail on the head. Now, in our conference, we operate several schools, but our conference budget for schools is like $290,000 next year. Mm-hmm. 80% of it is teacher salary. And so, you know, the argument is they ought to make at least somewhere, not too far above what the rest of the people are making. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to operate that way, mm-hmm. I don't know any solution to it, the cost, unless you go something like Jesuits or something like that, where you got people that are willing to be, they're willing to give their life and service to the school rather than like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. One answer to it, yeah, that's right. I don't know. And we have existed as a teacher through the years. I freely admit, because people have helped us. I could not have lived on what the schools have paid me through the year. Not the way I live. Maybe I'm. What was the word you used? Live like a Jesuit. We don't live like a Jesuit. Melvin.
I have long thought, it's quite clear that the cost for money is not a
This whole situation seems to be not a given to you. Okay, so I don't school you, but so if I'm doing a good job looking like here, Brad Bone comes over and says, let's just sit down and see how this is going.
Mm-hmm.
I want to help.
Mm-hmm. Okay, hold that till the end. And I'm nearer there. The other thing is two things that I think. It seems to me that people that are retired, there's things that they could do at school. Now, this is my conviction, personal conviction. This thing of retirement is could be an aggravation to me. People retiring and just going fishing for the rest of their life doesn't quite make sense to me. And I think you people have done better than the circles that I came out of in generating that kind of mentality that a person retires and even goes into fuller service. And I think, and with reference to our schools, whether it's secretaries, whether it's maintenance people, whether it's aides, and to me, a school could be successfully run if you had a few key teachers and then a lot of people to support them. It would make a big difference. I don't see that much of that kind of support generated in our circles yet, but I have faith that it's coming. I think that is one answer to it. The other answer to it is, and that here again, I don't know where you are, I don't know your people, and that's fine, but I'll speak for ours. There would be some people involved in our fellowship and in our schools that are, well, they're wealthy people. And I came from a university, a private university where I went to school, Stanford University, and there's people that go through that school, and if Stanford University needs $100 million, they have no problem getting it. In fact, I think recently they generated in a couple of years $500 million just by putting letters out to all their good friends. Now, we're not after $100 million, but I do think that there are people in our fellowships that have not developed that kind of giving mentality to something that is important. But I know that that money is available. And I think that's one answer. If there would be funds put up to generate that kind of thing. I know in one school where one teacher last year was paid outside the whole school system by a brother. He said he would pay this teacher's salary. So the school wasn't even involved in it. And I think we need to generate more of that kind of thing. Yes?
In an indirect method, are we not saying then that we do not value the education or the learning in our children if we are not willing to support in that type of way?
Oh, yeah. We'll pay a doctor $200,000 a year, think nothing about it, be glad to do it. The teacher, maybe 20. So what's the most important, our body or our soul? Now, Joel may have a different outlook on that. Okay, the other thing, public school. There's an article here. If you would read Revelation 13, 11 through 18, we're not going to do that now. See this picture here? He has a robe on, holding a Bible. He even has black shoes on. This is a lamb holding a Bible with a staff. But this is the beast of Revelation 13, 18. And as I read about this recently, to me, in many situations, that's what the public school system is. It has a facade of looking good. It has a facade of being okay. It has this outward appearance that it is even Christian at times. But I guess if I believed anything, I believe it's full of the devil, really. And I substitute taught in public school just a little bit, and that was enough. And while I was there, I would just look at the textbooks, just pick them up and look at them. And here I am in a junior high school, and they have all these textbooks there that these children are supposed to read, and it has to do with Greek mythology. It has to do with mysticism. It has to do on and on and on. Here's these junior high school children, and that is the textbooks provided by my tax money for these children to read. But you try to put a New Testament there for them to read. See, everything today is politically correct except Christianity. And I think that we need to remember that. And I remind students of that. I'm not saying that you can't go to public school and go to heaven. I think it's possible. It might be a difficult road, but it depends on the child. Wouldn't you agree with me? I think I know some children that could go through all of that and they just reject it all and it doesn't rub off on them. I think those might be fairly rare children, but I believe there are those kind. You can go in our area, like this mother I was talking to, mother and father. If we don't take this girl, she's going to public school. You know, and what am I supposed to do? I mean, and then they send her, and all at once I'm responsible for her well-being, spiritually, seriously. I mean, they're expecting me to maintain this girl's fellowship with God. Isn't that a mission? And I know her name, and that's all right now. But I think we need to recognize that if there are certain things, public schools do an excellent job. They have excellent equipment. They have all air-conditioned classrooms. They have all the science equipment. They have buses available if you want to go on field trips. The opportunity to learn and learn a lot is available in a public school. And if you want to extend that to colleges, I think that there, unless the Christian schools develop something more with reference to that, if you want to be an electrical engineer, I think you may have to go in our area. I know you'll have to go to a public school. Or at least one per se. It might be a private university, but it's all the same. There is no options. And I think the children that go there, students that go there, need to be aware of the problems of going there. And as pastors and teachers and parents, we need to make them aware of that. Would you go and see a doctor that never went through school? He just quit milking cows, and the next day he said he was a doctor. And hung up his shingle. Well, it's not legal. But my point is if you're going to go see a doctor about the pain in your tummy, you want to go to somebody who knows what they're talking about, don't you? Particularly if you're going to pay them $100 for the visit. And so we kind of admit that there's a place there for that, or we wouldn't be going to seeing an attorney. Even Paul, he said, bring, what was his name, the attorney? In 2 Timothy. Zenas, the lawyer. Since he mentioned that specifically, I think he wanted him for his legal skills for something. So at some point in time, there may be a place, unless it's completely replaced, with equivalent Christian colleges. There's a place for public school. But it's dangerous business. It's a wolf in sheep's clothing. I believe Jesus himself would say that if he were here. Am I being too harsh about that? Do you think I am, Milo? You think? I don't want to sound radical. What?
I would just make one.
Okay. Make it.
One thing that probably schools do that really great, just think if they all shut down overnight, we have a real problem with all those people that go there. I asked public school friends and teachers or friends. They put up one. And they're taking people who are dead.
Uh-huh. That's right. So they're keeping them off the street.
Well, why do you do it more than that? I just said they
That's right. City of Modesto, every year in high school, there's 2,000 students drop out. And they don't even track them down. And they're roaming the streets looking for trouble. Or spreading it. Vocational schools, I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on that. They focus on the job. Again, unless we're going to have welding schools and woodshop schools and all of that, which we have a very difficult time with in our Christian schools, we've never been able to really generate that. There's a place to learn a trade. When something goes wrong with my car, I'd like for somebody to work on it that knows what they're doing. And that takes some training in this day and age. You know, if you looked at a 1929 Plymouth and opened the hood on it or something, there's the motor, and there's the carburetor, and there's four spark plugs, and a coil, and what else, Melvin?
Distributor,
right. Anybody ever do that with one of those old cars? You wonder, what makes this thing run? There ain't enough parts. You open the car, the hood on a modern one, and I don't even know what all those wires and hoses are for. I don't have the slightest idea. It's all mystery to me. And too often when I ask the guy to garage, he kind of acts like it is to him too. Really. And so, you know, there's a place for vocational schools. But it's if you have an object in going there, and you're not just going there to pass the time. But it focuses on the job. And that's an area that I always wish that our, and I hope that our church school at home, they're starting a new one. I hope we can do more with that kind of thing. I think there's a real place there for Christian schools to get involved in vocational things. Academic schools, that more speaks. We've really talked about that, of the professional part. Mentor. And I don't know how many of you take Focus on the Family. They have a whole article here in the December, January, 95, 96 on mentoring. How many of you ever take this magazine? You know what Focus on the Family is. They have some good articles in there. It focuses on a relationship. I've done some of that. Tutoring might be a better word for that, or another word for it. And if you tutor a child on one-to-one, you develop a real relationship. There's a danger in that. And I've even talked to fathers about that. I say, you know, I spend more time with your, even as a teacher sometimes, I spend more time with your boy than you do. And that can be good and that can be bad. But I encourage fathers to spend more time with their children so there isn't that imbalance. I like that focus to be taken off of me and not put on me. Videos, they focus on the lesson, maybe focus on gadgetry. I wasn't sure what to say about them. If you take a Becca homeschooling, it's very heavy in videos. They do it primarily by videos. My brother uses those. Many of them, all of them, as far as I know, do an excellent job of presenting a lesson. They do take the personality out of it. I think there's something cold about all that, a child looking at a screen and getting their lessons. I'm not sure how to verbalize all that, but there's something about that makes me uncomfortable. It makes them more antisocial, and some of them, that's one reason they're homeschooling. I didn't mention that with homeschooling, but I know parents that have homeschooled because their children just weren't that social and they didn't get along that well with other children, so they take them home. Well, I've never quite seen how that helps. Seems to me like that makes that problem worse. And then if you use videos and they get their lessons from a video, they just become more of a loner. And it's my observation, even among the children that come to school, and it's with reference to computers, to me it's a real bad thing about computers that they tend to feed that in a child of being a loner. They don't need to communicate with anything else. Everything they need's right there. Any of you have anything to say about that?
Yes.
Just the one aspect where the video lesson really is focused on the person presenting it, as opposed to if you would be working in a, if you were on your own studying, working with a book.
Yeah.
Interacting with book as opposed to learning from a person.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Like a correspondence course.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And the ones of those I've seen, I have some. They're good teachers. So they wouldn't bother to put them on there, whether it's algebra or whatever it is. Biology. One more thing about about public school. Focus on the Family has a series of these. This is Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States. That's what this CIECUS. And Focus on the Family publishes some of these that exposes what these people believe. And this whole thing, it promotes homosexuality, incest, and doing your own thing openly. And if any of you are interested, if you want to know what's going on, most parents do not know what goes on at school. If you want to know what goes on in public school with reference to sex education, you ought to read some of this. I'll just read this. Homosexuality, heterosexuality, and bisexual people are alike, except for their sexual attraction. Homosexual love relationships can be as fulfilling as heterosexual relationships. That's right out of direct quotes out of public school education. And it goes on and on. It even, in one place here, it gives a quote where they say, incest, that means between like a father and a daughter, can be a healthy relationship. So I don't know. It's more of the devil in the public school system. Now, we have one last thing that I want to talk about and bring that in, and you can read this other material, mission statements. I don't know whether those mean anything. I think you ought to have one that you can focus on. This conclusion is what I would call is the big church picture. If you think about a congregation, it has all kinds of people in it, has all kinds of gifts. You can read Ephesians 4 where it talks about the gifts. You can read 1 Corinthians 12. You can read 1 John 1. You can read Romans 12. And it talks about there the Lord in His Word talks about the diversity of people, the diversity of functions. Some of them you don't even want to talk about. There's things that go on in a church congregation that's best not to even be talked about. I'm not saying it doesn't need to go on. It just doesn't need to be talked about. It's not worth talking about. It's not best to talk about it, is what I mean to say. It's worth doing. And so there's all kinds of people in this ecclesia, this group of God's people. And I would venture to say that in your congregations, unless they're extremely small, you would have a great diversity of talents, gifts, inclinations, even spiritual gifts. If you ask people what their feelings about God was, you would get a great variety of answers. Some people would think that God is a person, a man, a being of judgment, maybe. Another person would look at Him solely as a person of love. And all of those are true. And we accept all of those in our church congregation. Why can't we accept that diversity in how we teach our children and support each other? That is really my whole story for this thing. If you have a parent that cannot afford it and nobody offers to help them, and they say, I'm sending my child to public school, you're not going to get anywhere by saying, curse you. Are you? You might as well say, what can we do to help you? Would you care if I met with your child and talked to them or talked to all of you together so they knew what they might face? Help them. Isn't that what we're all about? If you don't get encouragement out of the church community to do whatever you're going to do, where are you going to get it? So whether we homeschool, whether we go to public school, whether we have our own church schools, whether we use a combination, the children go to Bible school, my granddaughter's going to Bible school, Prairie Bible Institute, vocational school, whatever they're going to do, let's get together and do it together. And then we can use some of these ideas. When we go on a field trip in our church school, I like to invite homeschoolers to come along. And frequently they do. We've had different special programs at school. We have career day and we do all kinds of things. I like to put out a flyer and invite the homeschoolers. Many of them will come. Give them the opportunity to be a part of your school. We would have some of them maybe even visit at times. If a parent has any questions, if I have any material at school and a homeschool mother says, ask me about it, I say, sure, I have some. Do you want to use it? It won't cost you anything. You're not going to hurt it to use it. Why can't we offer that kind of cooperation? Even as homeschoolers, and I think they do this more together, but help each other, like Melvin was talking about. Maybe too much is centered on our church day schools. Maybe we do need to use more a combination. After all, a good part of my time at school is spent what some people might term as babysitting. Isn't that true? Maybe we ought to get people in the mode to do that and even help. Maybe a homeschool parent or a father that is involved in homeschool, maybe he'd come to your church school and he could do PE. So his children could be there and they could play PE, physical ed, with the other children. I read one time that you get a group of people around a table this big. I think in this scenario that was given, it was 8 or 10 people. You would be amazed at the collective knowledge of those 8 or 10 people. One person might know how to do trigonometry. Another person might know that Mussolini made the Italian trains run on time. Another person might know all about the stars, and you could go on and on and on. You take 8 or 10 people right here in this thing, and collectively, if you thought about how much they know, it would amaze us. So why can't we get together as church people and put our heads together and get this whole big school picture to work as one instead of, oh, you homeschool? Oh, you go to public school? Oh. Is that too idealistic? What's wrong? Is there something wrong with that? Just helping each other in whatever way we can. We all got together and said, how can I help you? And they said, how can we help you? And look at the whole thing as a total picture. Because what are we after? We want all those children in, don't we? Now what we're after? I'm not after somebody saying, oh, that's great teacher, great year. Or terrible teacher, terrible year. Whatever. I mean, that's not what we're all about. When I hold that little great-granddaughter, what's the future in it all? Maybe the secret to the cost, children feeling left out. I don't know whether you deal with that, those of you that are pastors and parents, but I have parents come and say, you know, my daughter's left out. She's neglected. That hadn't ought to be, had it? Are we doing our job as a church community if we have children in our church community that feel neglected? Isn't that what Jesus came? Was to make everybody feel like they're a part of this kingdom. I'm done. Is there any questions? Any? Easy ones. Yes.
For a comment earlier, you raised, we were talking about the funding of the school.
Mm-hmm.
You said which is more important, the body or the soul.
Mm-hmm.
I think the very problem is that many people would see that as an invalid question because they don't see that the soul's at risk. that they don't see that the school really is so important in developing the school, or they would be more willing to support it. So I think really our group, which is alluded to back here, to get its support is for the people, to parents and adults, to really see the importance of the education.
Would you say that was true of teenage parents? They don't see the soul at risk? Or are you talking about,
well, anybody
10 years old?
Anybody who is not doesn't have burden for giving more doesn't see it.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I would talk to a lot of parents of teenage children that are pleading with tears in their eyes for help. They don't like the path they see their children on. But maybe not early enough, that's true. They don't see the soul at risk. They don't see that what happens at 5 years, is that connected with what happens at 6 years, so therefore it's not connected to what happens at 7 years, and therefore not 8 years, and you go on them pretty quick. They're 16 years old, and you try to rope them and put shoes on them, and they're used to going barefoot. And that's about where the whole thing is.
And along with that, would you also, some of those would say, well, they were the Christian school, but if the school had been better equipped, it could have done better.
Yes. I say Christian school teachers are on a mission field, bigger than you might realize. And I know that they can be moved, children, but it's difficult. Yes?
You talked about, you know, helping everybody, you know, giving encouragement to want to homeschool and want to send them to public school or whatever their choices are. Some people would say that's what the book of Judges, everybody doing what right in their own eyes, mm-hmm. So we're supposed to help them do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's true. But let me tell you this, John. Then answer me this. If it's not the will of God for any parent to send their child to public school, then you need to get up on Sunday and you need to tell your congregation that it is not the will of God for anybody here to ever come to this church that sends their children to public school. I mean, if it's that critical an issue, that comment in Judges was made with reference to, they did ever write in their own eyes, with reference to God, what they believe. You follow what I'm saying? That's a little different than saying, you could almost, if you're going to take that as an extension into everything, you could say everybody ought to be a farmer. Because in a way, everybody does what's right in his own eyes with reference to vocationally. You see what I'm saying? I make a difference there between whether I serve the Lord or not, as opposed to what I do to make a living or how I teach my children. I think there would be a difference, wouldn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't saying that's the way I feel about it. I just didn't know that that's the way some people
are. I know. But see, I'm probably a little sensitive to that remark because people would say, well, in our fellowship, we got children. There's one in Africa now, and there's one in Asia. And I went to Brazil, and my boy went to Estonia, and there's others going other places. It looks to me like everybody's just doing what's right in his own eyes. And we're accused of that. You just do what you want. Well, before God, in a way, that's true. But I hope that what I want is what he wants. And I don't think I'm in a position to tell a parent that, no, that's not what God wants you to do with your children. I don't feel moved to do that, Melvin.
This is leading that question. And one thing we should recognize is that typically a movement doesn't have to be an education, it can be somewhere else. A mass movement occurs because there is a need somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
If something is not happening, So the least we can do is look at these movements and see what it is that is not happy right that causes a parent to choose, let's say, a video school versus somebody else. They chose that option for a reason. Or if we really believe everybody should be in a Christian school, church Christian school, well, then take a good long hard look at these movements and observe what it is that is that gets driven and see what you can do to make that correction in your school.
Good point. When I have parents say, well, I'm going to send my child to public school, guess what most, and I say, why are you doing that? Guess what most, one of the most common answers is? Anybody? That's one thing, but there's a deeper one than that. I want them to be able to play sports. So is the problem public school? No, it's what the goal, it's the goal of the parent for the child. Now that's a whole other subject.
But we do well to be very observant.
Yeah, right. That's right. So what is the real thing?
I'm not saying we build sports programs. I'm saying, well, okay, then you say, well, why is it that these parents want to do this?
Right.
And
yes?
What about what they call it, the shock is too great? Have you heard that? Or some parents saying that when they choose to send.
Wouldn't we all agree that there's a lot of difference in children? So some children need more protection than others. And I wouldn't, and wouldn't you further agree that before God, and I tell parents this, I hope I've told them the right thing, God is not going to hold me responsible for the soul of your child. He's going to hold me responsible for what I teach him every day. But the parent is the one that's responsible before God. And so the parent needs to be, and I urge them to be perceptive enough about the child's spirit to know what is best for him or her. And I think before God, they're more qualified to do that than I am. And that's why when a parent comes and says, I don't know what happened to Joe, he's the third child in our family, and we treated all the children alike, and he turned out, however. And right away I say, well, that's your first mistake. God doesn't treat everybody alike, and neither should you. And a parent ought to be sensitive enough to know what's good for a child. Some of them, you get their attention by putting your arm around them and talking to them. Some of them, it takes a little bit more than that. Really. But I think it's the parent that needs to be sensitive to that before God. And then once they make that choice, then I'll help them. Anything else? You won't be disappointed at being a little bit early, Milo? Well, Milo says he's ready. He's tired of all this.
No.
Okay. Oh, yes.
I think homeschoolers may tend to be a very independent lot. I heard a homeschool father say that we are very independent.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes maybe it even comes to the point that we don't want other people to teach our children in Sunday school.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's right. Yeah, this independent thing. That's true. Okay. Thank you for listening and participating.
Thank you for calling.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the DocForLearning.org.